Thank you for joining us, and welcome to another edition of Answers Network. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and for those of you that have been listening, sending in questions and comments, thank you so much, and please continue to help spread the word that Answers Network brings on special guests that can inspire, educate, and in some cases entertain, while bringing answers and options to making our lives happier, healthier, and more successful. And remember, if you can't listen live, go to our website at answers.network and browse through a variety of heartfelt and enlightening topics. I am confident that you will find something that will help bring greater joy to your life. I also have a favor to ask. Please forward one of our shows to your social media group and to someone you know who can benefit from a particular subject. This is one powerful way that we can make a positive influence in the world together. Now, our topic today is also the title of our guest's new book, Agents of Deceit, The True Story of Life Inside Today's Chaotic and Dysfunctional IRS. Rick Green, MBA, is a former IRS agent, accounting professor, and auditor in the private sector. He offers practical advice for the individual taxpayer to stand up to the return or enduring an audit. Rick Green is not a tax protester. He encourages, he encourages people to pay their taxes and discourages any sort of illegal tax evasion, which can result in fines and even criminal prosecution. Instead, Rick explains how to file a return that makes it easy for the IRS to understand and how to limit the impact and cost of an audit. When it comes to paying your federal taxes, knowledge is power, and Rick's one-of-a-kind look into the dark side of the IRS will help readers to shrug off their fear of the tax agents while learning how to pay their fair share of taxes, but not a penny more. Finally, Rick uses government documents proving the IRS's disorganization and increasing ineffectiveness, which the IRS largely ignores. And he believes that such chaos and dysfunction demands that the IRS be abolished and replaced by a national sales tax or a VAT, which is what many other countries already do. So with that, Rick, welcome to Answers Network.
Thank you, Alan.
Well, it is my pleasure to have you on. And it's interesting because when my producer told me about your book, and then I had a chance to go through it, I really liked the fact that, that again, you were not telling people, you know, this is how to cheat the taxes or anything. It was just, this is how to pay your fair share, but it's also how to not be bullied by an organization that seems to have grown so big and, you know, that it's almost impossible to fight them. And so one of the things you mentioned in your book, and maybe you can describe what you mean when you say that IRS agents, they're trained to find and take our money, period.
Well, the IRS has actually created a surveillance society. They live in the fear that somewhere, someplace, there's money they can't tax. And to them, that's the most important thing. Fairness, patriotism, doesn't matter. It's just to get the money. We had a saying in the service that it's not the last dollar we're after, it's the fast dollar. Most people don't recognize, and this can be a source of help, most people don't know that auditors have to account for their time. They can't just go in there and spin their wheels. Pardon?
No. I was going to say, yeah, because I think one of the things that you mentioned in your book, and I thought it was incredibly alarming when you say in the book that IRS agents are expected to make $1,000 an hour when auditing people. And right. This to me, this sounds like a quota. How are they getting rewarded for this?
Well, It used to be before my time, the IRS would actually pay quotas based on your results, and Congress put a stop to that.
Good.
The way the IRS got around that, they assigned small groups of agents to managers, and the managers knew who the producers were, and so they were able to reward them. And so that can be beneficial to the taxpayer, because the auditor wants to get in there, get the audit over, and get out with a reasonable amount of taxes. And so that leaves you room to negotiate with them. You know, beforehand, decide what you think is a fair amount that you owe, and then offer that. And if they're not cooperative, tell them that you're just going to take it to appeals. Appeals is an IRS department, and they're generally more sympathetic to taxpayers than auditors are. So the knowledge that you're sophisticated enough to know about appeals and how they can benefit you immediately identifies you as somebody who can't be pushed around.
You know, one of the things that you also mention in your book is you talk about terror tactics. What are a couple of examples of what you're describing as terror tactics that are used by the IRS agents?
Well, they'll go in there with a huge unrealistic amount. Another thing worth noting is that they target the lower income people. The wealthy can afford tax attorneys, CPAs to protect them. And so the IRS doesn't consider them to be high-value targets. They go for the low-hanging fruit. And so they tend to pick on the lower-income people. In fact, there were statistics published just a few months ago that shows that people that make less than $25,000 per year are audited more than those that make $500,000 to $1 million.
Well, and it seems like it should be just the opposite. I mean, it seems ridiculous that, if you're considering that your time is valuable, not just your time, but even the IRS agent's time, then to go after someone that, I mean, even if there was something, I mean, there can't be that much if you only match where you can get. Whereas if you go after somebody who, you know, who made $10 million, there's a much greater chance that you're going to find a larger amount of money. But what you're saying is, it sounds like what you're saying is they're more concerned with a W. They're more concerned with a win versus a loss. And it sounds like if they're going against high-powered attorneys or accountants, that they must be taking losses, you know, to where they're actually losing the battle. And does that have something to do with this? Is this an ego thing?
Well, it's just a realistic fact. The wealthy, the Jeff Bezos, the Bill Gates, they have the funds to fight the IRS. Somebody who's making $25,000 a year really doesn't.
Of course.
And so it turns out, everybody says that, well, the great thing about the IRS is that it's a progressive tax system, which means that the wealthier pay disproportionately more. Well, it's not like that. It's very regressive.
Well, what do you think that we can do differently? How would we if you were placed in charge, if I gave you the magic wand, where would you want to see the changes to where we could have something that is much more fair and equitable to everybody?
Well, I think a national sales tax is the way to go, because there you're just auditing businesses who are usually better resourced to protect their interests. And there's also practical economic benefits, because if you're taxing consumption, in effect, you're encouraging savings.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're taxing savings, you're discouraging people from saving.
Right, which then makes people much more dependent. Then we have a greater percentage of our people living paycheck to paycheck.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Which then the question is, why are they doing it that way, and is it on purpose? Because it provides greater control on their part. Let me go to, there was a question that came in. And again, I want to thank those that take the time to send these questions in. Some people send them in ahead of time because they're not going to be able to listen live. And so we like to get these questions asked so that they can listen at a later time and still gather new information. This one reads, "Everyone I know is very upset over the current administration's plans to hire 87 new IRS agents." Okay, so I'm not aware of that, but apparently the listener believes this. It says, "So many of us already don't trust the government any longer after all the damage they have done to our country, damage that seems to have escalated this last year. Watching their outrageous spending and paying of our money to support hundreds of thousands of illegals, woke programs, while taking us to greater and greater debt. Can they actually be stopped, and how can we do it?" And this is from Otto in Utah.
Well, there is a backlash in Congress over giving the IRS more resources, because when you give greater resources, what they tend to do, they tend to go after the low-hanging fruit, because they have greater audit potential. And so if you give them an extra $30 billion, that doesn't mean they're going to audit more billionaires. That means they're going to audit more everyday Americans like you and me.
Mm-hmm. So another thing you mentioned in your book, you talk about some of the secrets in your book. And again, for those that are just tuning in, our guest was an IRS agent himself. So this is not somebody who's just, making a claim that this is what they believe. This is somebody who was part of them. And you say in the book that there are secrets behind an IRS audit. Can you give us a little information on these secrets, and what does that mean to all of us?
Well, the primary thing is that even though agents have broad discretion about what to look at, they're lazy. They want to get it over with. And so the wise thing to do is that when you go into an audit, kind of have an idea of what you think would be a fair resolution, and tell them that you'll sign the RAR for this amount.
And what's an RAR?
A revenue agent report. That's the one where they put in dollars and cents what your adjustment is.
Okay.
And that pegs you as somebody who's a little bit more knowledgeable and you know your rights. The whole IRS functions on intimidation. During training, we'd actually have role-playing exercises where we would take charge of the audit. And when we'd set appointments, we would never ask, what's a good time for you? We would tell them, you're scheduled to be audited at such and such a time on such and such a date. Be there. The whole scheme is to show intimidation.
Well, I mean, we all know that meeting with an IRS agent, you know, can be scary, or it's at least a scary thought.
It's designed to be that way.
Okay, well, if it's designed to be that way, can you explain how a person, through your recommendation, how can we best survive, or even, as you wrote in your book, laugh at an IRS audit?
Well, I appreciate the bizarre. I mean, it's really bizarre that something like maybe 100,000 agents terrify 200 million taxpayers. Mm-hmm. And it's like anything else. If you know you're right, you can be a lot more confident. If you go in there not knowing your rights, you're putty in their hands.
Okay, well, what are some of those rights that we need to know?
Well, you have a right to all the paperwork that's generated. You have a right to see it in writing, not just take the agent's word for it. You do have limited rights to appeal. You can appeal to the manager. You can appeal to the taxpayer advocate. And so you have various avenues to minimize the oppression of the IRS.
Well, you mentioned about a taxpayer advocate. Is this something that they have to provide, or is it someone that you have to hire and pay?
No, that's interesting. The taxpayer advocate is actually a part of the IRS apparatus, but she's independent. She's responsible to Congress, not to the IRS.
Okay.
And most people are unaware of her, but if you have a problem, if you go to her, she can be quite helpful.
Well, I know that there's lots of commercials and such that we see or hear on the radio or see on television about people offering to be a taxpayer advocate, but yet it sounds like it's another expense.
Right.
So what you're saying is that if you know to ask for one within the IRS, they have an obligation to connect you to an internal taxpayer advocate.
Well, they don't assign one to you. What it is it's an office. And so you send a complaint to the office and they'll work to resolve it.
Okay.
They don't represent you specifically. They represent the American people as a whole.
Okay, so essentially they would give you a number or an email address or something and saying, you know, if you call them or if you contact them, they will help people by providing what more of their rights or by maybe helping them put their paperwork together. How would that advocate help them?
It depends on the circumstances. If papers got lost, she'd track them down.
Okay.
Another interesting thing she does, she'll issue periodic reports about the state of the IRS, and some of them are very, very scathing. So she does make for an interesting read.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit about the book and your situation. What were some of the things that happened that brought you to the point that you felt, okay, it's time for someone to write a book and to get the information out to the people of exactly what's going on behind the closed doors of the IRS?
Well, first of all, there were so many misconceptions I felt had to be rectified. I thoroughly believe that the American citizen is entitled to the truth. I did have a personal reason for coming down hard on them. They fired me for being a whistleblower. But you don't need to feel sorry for me, because I had a very good lawyer who got me a very, very good settlement, tax-free.
But the unfortunate part about that, I mean, that's good for you, but if they're doing something wrong to the point that they lose in court, they have to pay out huge amount of money, but that money is still our taxpayers' money.
Right. And
it's still not, you know, so all they do is go increase their budget. So there doesn't seem to be anything that would motivate them to do the right thing. Because even if they do the wrong thing, all it means is we just take more taxpayers' money and pay it out.
Well, recently, Congress has become more and more reluctant to appropriate money for the IRS.
You know, the listener, I think that was that Otto? Yeah, so Otto from Utah. Have you heard anything about that? That there is information out there that the IRS, that the current administration, new IRS agents? I mean, that seems like a huge expense, and How do you even justify that expense if you're going to put out that much money? They must believe that there's a huge amount of money that they're going to take in to make that worthwhile.
Are you asking me or Otto?
No. I'm asking you. If you've heard it, Otto has put this in here, you know, as a statement of fact, that he and everyone he knows are very upset over the current administration's plan to hire 87 new IRS agents. Have you heard that? And if not, does that sound feasible?
Yeah, I've heard that.
Okay.
As a practical matter, the IRS is so unpopular, there's a big question whether they'll get all of that. And if they do get all of that, they're not going to start auditing the wealthy. They go after the lower hanging fruit. They'll audit the truck drivers, the fast food workers, because those are the people that have the greatest audit potential. For the amount of resources it takes, they can get more money from them. So hiring more agents isn't really going to solve the problem. That's why I've become so cynical about doing any reform IRS and go with a national sales tax, where you can't play those kind of games.
Well, give some examples of, because I know other countries do this, where they have a VAT or a national sales tax. And as you said, it's based on consumption. It seems like it would reduce our overall expenses as far as, you know, if much of what it is that we're paying taxes for is to continue to fund this huge government entity, we're funding them to take our money. You know, how much of the money that's actually being collected is just to continue to fund them? What percentage of that? And if we took that out, it may be that this would be a way to reduce taxes on everybody, and especially on lower income, middle to lower income people. It would be reduced because it would be based on consumption. So, you know, for instance, you know, lower to middle class earners aren't buying, you know, $10 million jets, you know, they're not buying, you know, $200,000 cars, you know, or have an art collection worth, you know, $50 million. You know, so that if we did it based on consumption, it seems like it just makes so much more sense.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so I'm agreeing with you on that, but yet, what do you believe is the reason? There must be a reason that the government does not want to do that. Is it control? Is it power? What is it?
Well, under King 13, the tax industry is approximately $500 billion a year. That's representatives, IRS administration. And so they're not going to go quietly into the night. Yes, it will be a very difficult job to replace them. And it's a fight that we're all going to need to be in together. Liberals, conservative, right wing, left wing. It's not going to work with just 90% of Americans in favor of it. It's going to have to be pretty much unanimous.
Well, we're never going to get unanimous because, like you said, you know, the first thing is that for me, or they're not going to, and then you have the industry that feeds off of that, which would be the accounting industry. So that industry is not going to want this. But, you know, you know, if we had an industry that was, you know, that was providing what we have an industry that provides drugs to everybody. But, you know, there are things that once you can point out that it is not beneficial or it's not cost effective, you know, it's, you know, I don't think we need, you know, to have 100%. I think we need to have 51% of the people that vote and that tell the politicians that if you do not come up with a better plan, you will not be in office. So come up with a better plan or we will vote somebody in who will. And at that point, we only need 51%. So that would be my thing. So for everybody out there, think about who you're voting for. Think about what it is that they represent and what they think is important and where they think our money should be going. So that's my thought. Now with that, we're going to take a break and I'm going to do something a little bit different because during this break, we're going to bring you some information by a company called Boxes for Sunshine. And they have a Kickstarter campaign coming up. I believe it's starting tomorrow. So go to Kickstarter and look up Boxes of Sunshine. What they are doing is they are putting together ways to help people going through grief. And if there was ever a time in which we needed this, this is a time in which we need it. A lot of people have grief. This is something that can be beneficial for so many people. So it's put together by some therapists. And again, just check it out. I'm going to play a little bit about it here in a moment. But it is called Boxes of Sunshine.
I wanted to take Jason's pain away during his darkest hour when he lost his wife to cancer.
I'm a licensed therapist, but that didn't make me bulletproof. I hurt when my wife faded from my life. Even with years of training, I couldn't recover all alone.
Together, Jason and I took his grief, therapist experience, and my support to create boxes of sunshine that leave an impression for a lifetime.
Know someone who needs healing? Look for Giving Sunshine on Kickstarter March 15th.
And we're back. My guest is Green and his agent of life inside today's chaotic and dysfunctional IRS. Now we have another question that has come in. Or comment, and again, I want to thank those that take the time to do it. It says, I was audited years ago over a donation of some very expensive items to a fundraising nonprofit in New York. So again, so here's someone who's decided they're going to take all of their, not all, but, many very expensive things, they're going to donate it to a fundraiser. And I've been to some of these where you're donating these items, and then the nonprofit is then auctioning those things off, and that money's going to a great cause. So again, to sort of put it in context, but they were doing this in New York, and it said, I had just liquidated our home there, and we had full documentation on the purchase value, depreciation, and the donation. But it was denied because in Tennessee, the values of those items were considered overpriced. No negotiations were allowed. Is this an example of what you speak about regarding their questionable tactics? I ordered your book 2 days ago and can't wait to read it and tell our family and friends who are terrified of an IRS audit. And this is from Gracie in Nebraska.
Oh, well, first of all, thanks for buying my book. That's something we're going to get the word out. One of the big misconceptions about auditing is that it's a very precise, exact science. You're dealing with dollars and cents, and so it's easy to see. Well, in fact, it's very much up to the auditor what figures he wants to plug into to it. I've never heard that one before, that Tennessee allows different values than any other state. That really opens a can of worms. What happens if you go to California? Do you get a bigger deduction?
Well, yeah, that's a good point, because they were starting in New York, and yes, things are more expensive in New York and California. But that doesn't change the fact that they still made those donations and those items' values were placed. And it says that they had the documentation of what the purchase value was. So, I mean, how can you say if somebody buys something in New York, so I buy a painting in New York and they pay $10,000 for that painting and then they donate it to a fundraiser, when it comes time to pay your taxes, you then move. I don't understand how one state would say, well, you paid too much for that, but we donated it and the money went to charity. So I don't understand, but I think what the listener is asking you is, do you think this is an example of what you speak about regarding their questionable tactics?
Oh, yes. It emphasizes how arbitrary auditors can be. You think, well, they're dealing with dollars and cents, so they're business people, they know what they're doing. Anything that an auditor says or does, the burden of proof is on you to prove that he's wrong. One very crude way, if I didn't like a radio host, I could force you to just document everything on your tax return. And even if you were able to do that, I could claim the documentation was false. And so if I was particularly vindictive and had the time, I could make your life miserable. And it's not only that, I could if I want to allege fraud, I can claim that your tax returns are fraudulent. 13, when the Internal Revenue Act was first instituted, I can really make things miserable for your friend if I can show that you have some sort of a financial relationship with them. So if you pay your sound engineer, I could look at his tax return because it's related to yours and give him a hard time if I wanted to. Now, as a practical matter, that's not going to happen because IRS agents are just plain lazy. Our greatest our bureaucratic laziness, not the U.S. Constitution.
Well, one of the other things that you mentioned in the book that I thought was quite interesting is that you write about a rapidly approaching returnless society where the IRS plans to find and take your money as soon as you earn it. Can you tell us more about that?
Well, it's pretty descriptive. Your employer would notify the IRS how much he paid you.
Which they do.
Yeah. It's getting a lot worse, though, because now then they're requiring financial institutions, banks, to report all transactions over $600. So they're going to know everything about your finances.
Mm-hmm. Well, what are some of the legal deductions that we can use that a lot of people don't realize? You know, we're at this time. One of the reasons why, when I was speaking with my producer, that we thought this would be a good time to have you on is, you know, for those that are listening to this live, it's March. That means April 15th is soon approaching. And, you know, in many cases, somebody who normally does like a short form or something like that, you know, are they not getting back what they should, or are they paying too much? Are there ways that people just don't know about, so they're not using them properly?
Well, I'm hesitant to give legal advice because the IRS could always come after me and say I'm encouraging tax evasion.
Okay, well, and I was only putting the word legal in there so that everybody understood that we're talking about legal deductions. So I'm not, the word legal is in there in the same sense that I would want my accountant to only help me with legal deductions. So I don't know if that helps so that everybody knows this is not legal advice. You know, it is just the fact that There are so many deductions that many of us just aren't aware of.
Well, you're actually better off to post your name. He knows what the IRS will accept and what they'll frown upon.
Okay.
And probably the best kind of professional you can get is what's called an enrolled agent. That's a former IRS auditor.
Okay.
Who practices tax advice.
Well, I would guess they would know. all right. We have another statement, I guess, or question that has come in. This one reads, many years ago, I was notified by the IRS that I had not paid my quarterly taxes for my employees, receiving fines and interest fees. I was who was charging a hefty hourly rate and showed them the date. And then in parentheses, it says paid early, that we had paid the taxes, and the date that the IRS cashed the check. We were told that the computer must have applied the funds to the wrong quarter, so I needed to pay them again to stop the fees, and that the computer would do, and this is in quotes, an abatement, and I would eventually get the amount that was overpaid back, and all fines and interest fees would all come back to me once the computer was able to straighten this all out. After over a year of frustration and getting tired of paying the accountant to keep trying to get my money back, I gave up. That was the turning point of believing that we no longer that possessed a government that served us. I long wondered if the IRS agent we were dealing with went back into their office and laughed how they screwed another one. What's your thoughts about this mindset of get all you can get from the people? And this is from Robert in California.
Well, that certainly is a credible story. I can believe it. IRS personnel are very insular. And they like to tell war stories about how they screwed a taxpayer, what they were able to do. And so I don't think your questioner is being paranoid. I find it entirely plausible. Why isn't your congressperson involved?
Okay, it's a good idea.
The IRS actually has a special unit that deals with congressional inquiries, and they have to respond within something like 30 days. So I would go to my congressperson and have all the documentation and explain what the problem is, and let her take it from there.
Well, yeah, I like that. Now, you mentioned another thing where you say that the IRS has flunked at almost every audit by every other federal agencies. So if I understand you correctly, what you're saying is that the IRS itself has to go through it and they continually flunk at this. I mean, this seems like one of the most ridiculous things is that we have this, it's the biggest collection agency in the world that apparently flunks audits, but yet their job is to conduct audits.
It is bizarre. I can only think of David Burnham's book. He was a award-winning New York Times reporter, and he wrote a book back in the 80s, A Law Unto Itself, The IRS, Politics and Power. And they literally make the law. You know, they always say, well, we're under the jurisdiction of Congress. IRS personnel who's spending every minute of every day figuring out how to do things. Mm-hmm. And that's why I'm giving up on trying to reform them. I don't see it in the cards.
Well, we've only got a couple more minutes, but what can we do? In other words, you know, I know that you I love the fact that you really either, if you've given up on them being reformed, then essentially you want them abolished and replaced with a consumption tax. Like many other countries have. How can we, the people, help? And how can we help eliminate the IRS forever? And if done, how much money do you think it would suck if we could make that shift? In fact, I remember, I'm trying to think of his name, that the guy that he ran for president, what was his name? Herman Cain? Mm-hmm. He ran for president. And he was talking about more of a flat tax, but that it would be set up as either a flat tax or a consumption tax. And I remember at the time he had put out some numbers of how much money he thought that it would save our country. Do you have any information like that that would help people?
Well, the problem with the flat tax, it would still allow people to mess with the tax code. The tax code is something like 10 million words long.
Hold on. No. I mentioned the flat tax. I'm not suggesting it. I was saying I believe Herman Cain had mentioned that. But no, what I'm saying is that to have a consumption tax, how much money do you think that would save our country? Not to mention just the what it would help us in mental health.
Yeah. Paul Krugman, who's a Nobel laureate in economics, estimated that it would increase our economy by about $500 billion a year. Billion with a B.
$500 billion a year. So for all the politicians out there that want to run for an office, you got a better chance of getting elected is if you tell the people that you have a plan that's going to return $500 billion to our economy every year.
Right.
So let's see if we can get that done. So, you know, I got, thank you, Rick, for, you know, for writing the book, for being a whistleblower and for making a difference out there. And keep up the good work.
Okay, well, I really enjoyed talking to you, Alan. You're sort of a surrogate psychologist for me. It doesn't be good to vent.
Good. I'm glad that I could help in that way as well. So for everybody again, so that it's Rick Green, and if you want to pick up the book, it's called Agents of Deceit, The True Story of Life Inside Today's Chaotic and Dysfunctional IRS.
Yeah, it's on Amazon.
All right. So, and for everybody out there, please tune in next week as we are joined by Jill McCabe, and she is the author of It's Go Time. Build the business and life you really want. So plan on this. It's going to be a very, very high energy. it's going to be very high energy. And please visit our archives of past interviews at answers.network. And you can subscribe to the show through Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Rumble, Spreaker, YouTube, and so many other platforms. If you like what you hear, please leave a review. It helps us reach more people, and I want you to know we greatly appreciate it. And the next time you're on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter, please remember to stop by our page, check out some of our latest posts. If you like them, please like us and spread the word. For everybody out there, be good human beings and be with us again next week on Answers Network.
Hello, I'm Marty Cove. You might remember me from roles such as Sensei in the Karate Kid films. I've done over 100 films and countless stunts in my career, and I've always given 100%. With the damage done to my body over time, I needed to find relief from my chronic pain. My passion for health and fitness drove me to find a natural way to combat muscle pain. Teaming up with doctors, detectives, and a compounding pharmacist, we've created Marty's Cobra Cove Ultra Strength CBD Cream. It's the only thing that has been strong enough to knock out my pain, and fast. Honestly, you may have tried the rest, but it's time to try the best. It's legal, it's safe, and 100% effective. Show your pain no mercy. Go to www.martyscobracove.com.
You're listening to Answers Network with Alan Cardoza, only on LA Talk Radio.